Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair once again for our weekly time together here on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, the frequency modulated band, and streamed live all over the world, from Stockholm on one side of the world to Singapore on the other, on voiceofvashon.org, where you can also find From the Captain's Chair archived. And if I am skillful in doing the electronic magic, which comes after each of my broadcasts, it will be up sometime this afternoon. The greetings all over the world to all of the ships at sea, and there are literally thousands of them. If you go on to marinetraffic.com, you'll be able to look at the map of the world, and you'll see all of the ships that are underway. I'm going to talk a little bit more about a couple of things that I picked up on Marine Traffic this morning in doing my battle preps to come to be with you before I climb up in the captain's chair. But I have to bring a particularly sad note to the binnacle list this week, because one of our most prolific contributors to the Coast Guard Channel crossed his own bar, and that is David Hoff. David was particularly a great friend to your captain, because he entered the Coast Guard many, many years ago, and he was a crew member in the Coast Guard cutter Eastwind in Deep Freeze 1, the first of the Deep Freeze operations that happened not very long after World War II. And he was a reluctant shipmate of Admiral Richard Byrd. And it was always good to hear from David, as he would write his entries and make his posts on the Coast Guard Channel, because he was able to talk about the early days of Antarctic exploration after World War II from the berth decks, and not from the cabin and not from the bridge. And I found all of those to be particularly interesting. Furthermore, he was a proud proponent of the Fairbanks Morse double opposed piston engines. We've got hundreds of those. We have had hundreds of those in the Coast Guard. I've been shipmates with them in my Unimac. She had four of them. My Northwind originally was built with six double opposed pistons, Fairbanks Morse double opposed piston engines. They also were locomotive engines, and they were submarine engines. They were ubiquitous to power plant power generation as well. There's a wonderful photograph of David that he put on the Coast Guard Channel, which shows him helping to overhaul one of those, because we did our main engine overhauls in place. And it shows him being schooled by his chief in the magic of the double opposed piston engine. So, David, all of us on the Coast Guard Channel, and now all of Captain Joe's people who listen to me every week, hope that your crossing was an easy one, and we thank you, and thus we thank your family for giving us so much all over the years. David was of 90 summers. He proclaimed many times that he had had a good run for it, a great run for it. And it is my hope that not only was his crossing easy, but that his family is able to recognize the good things that he did. He was just a wonderful friend. So in Island news, and in fact in news all over the country, A week from today is Election Day. If you have not yet filled out your ballot, the one that fell down behind the radiator, I ask you to reach back there and pull it out and fill it out and send it in. Here in Washington, almost all voting is done by mail. There are a couple of exceptions to that. Certain people with challenges getting around, there are ways that they can vote other than by mail, but essentially, this is an all-mail jurisdiction. I would prefer that we have to go to a polling place just because I like to go and visit with my neighbors and to thank them for manning the polling stations. But Washington now, almost all mail. It's a very a simple system in concept, but I suspect the electronics of it are pretty complicated. I have full faith and confidence in the integrity of the voting system here in Washington. There's a way you can track your ballot electronically using your computer or your smartphone, and you are given links as to how and instructions as to how to do that when you complete your ballot. The ballot this time for Vashon has a particularly interesting entry in it, in that our own Captain O'Brien, who is one of us in friendship and in his abilities as a retired Alaska Airlines captain, but he's also one of us because he owns a boat, not a boat that has been without troubles. And so Truman is a candidate for one of the positions on the airport board. And I have to report that not only is he such a candidate, but that he is running unopposed. There are three positions on the airport board. Our airport is partially funded by the property tax, I believe. Truman will correct me on that if I'm wrong. But it is a district which requires an elected board. All three of the positions are open, and all three of them are running unopposed. I'm wondering how all of that is set up to have that happen. My experience with unopposed board members is with the Vashon Park District, where a member of the board ran unopposed for, I believe, almost 30 years. And in the end, we got what we paid for out of that unopposed. And at the appropriate time, that particular member was voted off of the board. So if you are a Vashonite and you are eligible to vote, I urge you, first of all, to get your ballot in. And secondly, you cannot go far wrong if you vote for Truman O'Brien as one of the positions for the airport board. The other thing about Truman is that very recently there was a YouTube program, a documentary put together. You know that I reluctantly use YouTube, but I find so many things on it of interest and concern to your captain that I reluctantly go on to it probably daily. And the name of this particular program is Aviation No Tie Downs. Now, all of us who have sailed in ships that carry aircraft know all about tie downs, low tie downs, high tie downs. This one is called Aviation No Tie Downs. We're going to put it in the trees. And all of this refers to the time a few months ago when Truman and his co-pilot, Craig, who was also Truman's student at one time, were flying together, and they lost power in their Piper and ended up putting the aircraft into the treetops from which they then had to be rescued. So I have seen part of it. It is a wonderful program, and it, again, is called Aviation No Tie Downs. We're going to put it in the trees. The the Washington State Ferry System continues to lollygag around. The most recent that they have done to make things more difficult for the island communities that they serve is that they have now gone to a two-boat schedule on a number of routes besides the ones that serve the magical isle of Vashon, and they've gone to a one-boat schedule on the route that goes from the city of Seattle to the city of Bremerton, which is where the large naval shipyard is. And they are no longer taking any reservations for the ferries that go up into the San Juans. And like the like Vashon, the only way that people can get up into the San Juan Islands is on the ferry system. They have cut one boat off of that schedule, and my heart goes out to all of those people who need to get flights, for example. And my guess is that they are getting off the island whenever they can and then staying RON down at SeaTac if they need to get a flight out of SeaTac. The ferry system is piously saying that their first concern is the safety of their passengers and their crews, and I certainly believe that. What I have a great deal of trouble accepting is the idea that they could not have foreseen the need for Coast Guard documented crew. And this is what they are using as their reason and their rationale for cutting back on the schedule. They just don't have enough people who hold the proper Coast Guard documentation. And I remind everybody again that the crew members who so ineptly guide you onto the ferries, and I've seen even more evidence of that recently, where the loadmasters are directing you first in one direction, then changing their mind as you have gotten halfway through the turn and have directed you into another lane. I've seen a couple of close calls, in fact, where drivers following the instructions of one of the crew members and then are re-instructed by another crew member to enter a different lane and have almost come to grief. So I just think that they, and not only think but know, that they could do better in the training of these people as the guiders of vehicles loading. Unloading is relatively easy. You just drive off when it's your turn, but getting the boats loaded is being done now by people with training that is marginal and needs to be improved. I got I'm on the mailing list for the National Lighthouse Museum, which is in Staten Island in New York. It is at the old Coast Guard base St. George, which is right next to where the Staten Island Ferry debarks people now. They don't drive any vehicles onto those big ferries anymore, I don't believe. And so in order to get vehicles onto Staten Island, you have to go across the Verrazano's Narrows Bridge, which goes from Brooklyn over to Staten Island. If you go to New York and you think that there's nothing interesting on Staten Island, think again. It is a very interesting part of the city, and you can get to it either by riding the Staten Island Ferry and going, among other places, to the National Lighthouse Museum. At the National Lighthouse Museum, there is a scale model, a small scale model of the Point Robinson Light, which I donated when the Lighthouse Museum was opening up. And Bay St. George is of particular interest to me because it was a place where I would go for watering when I was captain in the Coast Guard cutter Agassiz, named for the American naturalist Agassiz. And then I also had a job where I, for a while, had an office in the old Bay St. George building, which is now the National Lighthouse Museum. And I recommend people going to the Lighthouse Museum. It's very, very interesting if you are interested in lighthouses at all. The port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, Losa Long Beach, a man-made port. and is responsible for about 40% of the container traffic passing through the port and to the interior of the United States, has begun to charge for companies leaving containers in the port. And the reason for this is that containers are really piling up. If you go on to GCaptain, another one of my favorite sources for information nautical and information maritime, there's a photograph of the port, the combined port of Los and Long Beach, that shows containers piled up everywhere. And get the name of this particular organization, the Biden-Harris Supply Chain Disruption Task Force, has been put together to work with ports to get the containers moving back into circulation. And one of the things that they have come up with is this idea that the ports will start charging. Whether this came from the Biden-Harris Supply Chain Disruption Task Force, I know not. Maybe the port authority themselves figured it out. But they're starting to charge companies like, for example, Maersk and other companies that have just been letting their empty containers pile up. They're now allowing them to be stacked four high. That seems to me that they're running the risk of some of those containers flying all over the place with this storm that is coming. As of today, in waiting to get into the port of Los and Long Beach, there were 56 ships at anchor and 51 in holding areas. Now, this idea of holding areas is these are areas that are outside of the anchorages. And again, if you go to marine traffic, and you call up the and you look for the Los and Long Beach area, you'll see all of those ships that are, first of all, in the anchorage, and secondly, you'll see the ones that are in the holding areas. Now, in the holding areas, these ships are underway but not making way. And the in other words, they're drifting. And this bomb cyclone, which is headed in that direction, the Coast Guard captain of the port is urging all of those ships to go out and reach for some sea room. I add my urging to that. I always like to have plenty of sea room so as not to be knocked up onto a lee shore. A lee shore is a shore which is downwind of weather systems. And if you look at all of those ships which are adrift in that holding area off of the port of Los and Long Beach, you'll see that there are plenty of them that need to go out to sea. During the Vietnam era, when I was XO in the Coast Guard cutter Ingham, we were at one point we were in the port of Subic Bay for a short period of time for some necessary repairs, and my captain was in the hospital, so I was acting commanding officer, and a typhoon was headed toward Subic, and all the ships were there that were in port were given the option of going to sea and riding it out or staying in port, and my choice always was to go to sea and ride it out, rig for heavy weather, and go to sea and ride it out. I had full faith and confidence in my crew in snugging the ship down for heavy weather, and I had every faith and confidence in the ship herself and her ability to survive, and frankly, I had every faith and confidence in my abilities to manage the ship such that she would not only survive, but would survive with minimal damage. And that's exactly what happened. I took her to sea. I got as far out as I possibly could and rode it out, and it turned out to be the right decision. It was always my decision in when I was faced with storms, typhoons, hurricanes, to reach for as much sea room as I could get and then figure out which was the best side of the storm system to be, and head for that and ride it out. So I am urging all of these ships in that waiting area to do the same. Give yourself, captains, give yourself plenty of sea room, and I lust in my soul to be able to do more than just subliminally send that signal. The Bonhomme Richard major command investigation has now been completed, and interestingly enough, it is recommending disciplinary action for something like 35 people, including several admirals. My concern is that the commanding officer, the ship's captain, be held accountable for the loss of his fine ship. Besides the captain, his XO, his chief of the boat, all of them are being recommended for some kind of disciplinary action. And the flag officers that are being included in this list are people that were in the immediate chain of command above Bonhomme Richard, Bonnie Dick. A wonderful name. It goes back many, many hundreds. It goes back hundreds of years in our naval service. And what's interesting to me and a real concern to me is that after the fire in the USS Miami, a submarine, in 2012, there were service-wide reforms which were instituted having to do with shipboard fires, in particular shipboard fires in ships that are in maintenance availability. And many of those reforms were never followed. One of the recommendations that is coming out of the Bonnie Dick investigation is that there be a new safety command at the two-star level to replace the Naval Safety Center. What I would be looking at were I in this whole chain of command is, first of all, the ships, and I'm sure that they did, the ship's organization for fighting fire in port during a maintenance time. In my own ships, it was one of the standard requirements that at the end of each workday in a shipyard that all of the debris that had accumulated during that day's work be swept up and the ship squared away insofar as possible. And then, at some appropriate time during the after work hours, there would be a drill in which a fire would be simulated in one of the areas where work had been carried on. And that drill would be a provide drill. In other words, not only would the fire and rescue team be formed up, they would get suited up and they would bring all of the equipment to the scene and they would simulate fighting the fire as part of the drill. And this would happen every single day, every single evening. It looks to me that just looking at photographs of the ship, that there was an awful lot of debris all over the ship. And another thing which I found to be of particular interest was that she was not in a shipyard, but she was at the Naval Station San Diego down in National City. All of us San Diego hands know exactly where that is, have probably been there in ships. And so their organization for firefighting was completely different from what you would have had in a shipyard. Now, I'm not saying that there were cultural problems which go all the way through the Navy organization. We've already seen that through several terrible, terrible collisions. I've talked about that at great length, and we'll talk about it even at greater length in future broadcasts. But my heart's broken that a fine ship, possibly started by an arsonist, but even if that's the case, if that fire had been reported properly and fought properly, she probably would not have been lost. So I'm looking at the captain. I'm looking at the damage control assistant, one of the officers in the ship's organization. How was the ship organized? But then I know how she was organized because I've seen many, many rescue and assistance bills. I've overseen many rescue and assistance drills. And I don't think that she probably had a rescue and assistance drill in all the time that she was in that shipyard. That's my guess. So there'll be more coming on this, but I just am heartbroken that a fine ship got lost and a ship with such a fine name. In other good news, and I find this to be particularly interesting because I trained in square rigger sail, the Ecuadorian sail training ship Guayas interdicted a drug-laden, high-speed smuggling vessel. I would just have loved to have been on the quarterdeck of Guayas as she intercepted and brought to heel this particular ship. She was carrying cocaine, and there's a good example there of you use whatever platform you got to make the hit and to bring that particular ship to justice, to bring that particular high-speed boat to justice. I just think that's a wonderful story. Ecuadorian sail training ship Guaya. She's bark rigged. I have not looked her up, so I don't know whether she is close to a sister to Eagle. She's rigged the same way, and it is. And there's a wonderful photograph of her showing her with that narco boat alongside, and it is a great melding of the old with the new. The last piece of Golden Ray, my favorite car carrier, overturned car carrier, the last piece of her is now gone. And the Zim Kingston, which lost 40 containers overboard. And then, after that, some of the containers caught fire, is at anchor. She is... at anchor off of the, just to the south of the Port of Victoria. Believe the fire has now been contained and a decision will be made as to what is going to happen with her. Her crew was taken off of her, and the fire was fought by, among others, our brothers and sisters at sea in the Canadian Coast Guard. Red Hull ships and boats. It is now already 12:59, and it remains then for me from the captain's chair to require and that each of you who are responsible for other people, that you watch their six, take good care of them. We got some bad weather here in the Pacific Northwest, but nothing like what they got down in California. And so I am also hoping that all of those captains who are in those waiting stations are snugged down and are ready, just as I hope that every one of you who are responsible for other people are snugged down and are rigged for heavy weather. This is your Captain Joe, as always, from the captain's chair, on station, watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.
Vashon Island Growers Association, VIGA, connects islanders at every step of the local